Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
What's up?
Oh, everybody's here. Okay, good.
Are you still sick?
I just have a cold, so my voice, pardon if I sound odd. Or like
I like it.
Or like I'm totally over it.
You do sound a little
you
over it.
You did sound a little over it.
So.
Which one of us are you over? Just tell us. Is it all of us?
It's not any of you, my precious.
We are the best ensemble.
That's yes. Right.
I'm very disappointed that you did not get a SAG nomination.
It's outrageous.
So welcome back to the podcast. I'm Nathaniel from The Film Experience, and I'm here with Joe Reed.
I am Javert, and do not forget my name.
24601.
24601.
What?
Oh, it's a Les Mis reference. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Katie Rich.
Hello. I don't know who I am. I dropped the ball. I like Les Mis, and I dropped the ball. Move on.
And Nick Davis.
I'm Nick. I'm from nickunchained.com.
Which one of your supporting actors is going to make it then, Nick?
All of my supporting actors always make it, Nathaniel. That was weird.
That sounded strangely suggestive. I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know what supporting actors is a euphemism for, but it sounds-
I don't either. But I want to think about it in the back of my mind while we talk about movies I haven't seen.
Right, right. So I was going to be very much more structured this time. So I have questions for y'all. I'm sorry, I can't find my email. Just a second. Yeah, I'm definitely not one of those people that if I won an Oscar, I would pull out a pre-written speech. I would just
everything you ever hated.
I know. I would just sit there shaking, and I wouldn't remember.
I would Gwyneth.
Oh yes.
I would cry and annoy everybody, even people who thought they were for me.
Oh right. They'd end up booing you off of the stage. It would be very strange.
That's right.
So, Nick, you have not seen Django Unchained?
I have not seen Django, or Les Mis, or Zero Dark.
Okay. That's not... I mean, those are the movies that are not, yep. That are not coming out until Christmas. That's a pretty reasonable list.
Those are the last ones. Other than, you know, Quartet, the hot number that's on everyone's lips.
I have seen Salmon Fishing in the Yemen.
I was about to say, can we all regale each other of tales of our own Salmon Fishing in the Yemen experience?
It was on a plane that I was on at some point, and, like, I didn't have my glasses on. I was trying to sleep, so I, like, watched it fuzzily every time I woke up, but I had seen it already, so I was just like, oh, yes, I remember that scene. It was very pleasant, actually.
Seems like a very pleasant airplane movie, actually.
It's exactly the movie you want to watch, like, half hazily while trying to sleep. Like, because they just smile at each other and then go to the desert. It's great.
Did I tell you about the time I saw The Visitor on an airplane? The first time I ever saw The Visitor was on an airplane, which was a strange, strange experience.
You did not tell us.
That did not seem like an airplane movie to me. Like,
no.
That required a lot of my attention. And it was, you know, nice to be able to focus pretty intently on something that wasn't the airplane flight. So.
Yes. Yeah,
sure.
Well, nuances are, they're a little hard to deal with when you don't want to miss your juices or your...
Right.
Or your beverages for purchase.
Yeah. Well, I still ended up eating it, so that was good. I think that was on the flight to where I was going, and then on the return flight, on the red-eye return flight, I got Spider-Man 3.
Well, those two movies were double features in the markets.
They made about the same amount at the box office, too.
Yes, that's
true. Definitely.
That's absolutely true.
So, okay, so the salmon fishing is a perfect segue, because the number one topic I wanted to talk about was the Globe comedy nominations, because it's a topic that we don't actually get to talk about that much, since Oscar has no correlative category, unless you count one of the slots in the supporting realms, which usually go to comedies.
That's true.
So, I'm going to start myself with the best actress, because I think it's a really strange collection of
people. You are not. No way.
Well, I think it's a really strange collection of people, and having seen... I'm a little mystified about the Maggie Smith nomination, because having finally seen Quartet, she doesn't arrive until late in the film, and it's just a lot of people sitting around, like, being... slightly bitchy with each other and waiting for backstory.
Whose microwave just went off?
That was mine. But I don't know. Oh, wait, actually, it was my coffee maker.
Oh. Doesn't Maggie Smith seem like a nomination? They were, like, told that they could vote for her, and they were, like, given a lunch before they saw the movie, so they just voted for her regardless of the role itself. It seemed like a pretty easy default spot.
Well, sure.
I'm
going to
vote yes on that.
Well, sure, yeah. But then there's also the thing about, you know, like, if we want to decide what we complain about with the Globes, the number one complaint is always, oh, they're just doing it to get the stars there, but Maggie Smith won't fucking show to your little
that
dinner.
That's true.
No, that's true. Well,
maybe so, they like, thought you, if they threw multiple nominations at her that she would be shamed into coming.
Well, it, and the converse of that is, did you guys see the thing where, like, an ad already started playing in L.A. advertising Golden Globe nominee Barbara Streisand for her?
Oh,
the
no.
Globe, and they really quickly pulled it, but there are screen grabs that exist because it already
Won
her.
That would only happen for Barbara Streisand, too. I know that's not, like, her call, but, like, only for Barbara Streisand would that be, like, the presumptive Golden Globe nominee Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, amazing. And, like, had the image of the Globe and the whole bit, you know?
She wasn't that much of a lock. Like, that's the funny thing, is I had her predicted, I think, but I had her on, like, the last, you know, toss-up slot with, like, her or Anna Kendrick. She wasn't that much of a sure thing.
It's not that often you hear them in the same sentence.
Well, that, although, cast that movie, Hollywood.
It is weird. Like, I did think Ted, I think, like you, Nathaniel, that Ted was going to find its way in there. It's kind of depressing that they just default to Salmon Fishing in the Yemen as a comedy rather than do anything funny. Mm-hmm.
It's not funny. And it's not, its goal isn't even to be funny.
It's like, just very, it's pleasant.
It's
yeah, it's just low stakes.
Well,
in a way,
I don't think they care about how long their category names are. So maybe it could, maybe they should change it to best comedy or musical or pleasant flight viewing experience.
Best performance in a pleasantry.
Well, and you see this happen with the Emmys too, and I kind of feel for the conflict there because you have these movies that aren't quite comedies and they're not quite dramas. And Salmon Fishing may not be the best example. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't, like, know. But if you have these things that are sort of...
How could you, fan of Emily Blunt?
I know. Well, I'm going to see it now. I had all my eggs in the Your Sister, Sister basket. But I did say, I'm just going to take this opportunity to brag a little bit, that the last podcast I did say, they do love Emily Blunt at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, that was a soothsayer move right there. I thought of you the minute I heard that announcement.
Yeah. It was, I mean, whatever. I didn't officially predict it in my column, so I don't get the credit for it, but I'm just saying.
It all happened here, you guys.
This is why I do not miss a Film Experience podcast, because that's where you get the real dirt, the real hints on where to pick. Anyway, but for these movies that are sort of like their light dramas or their more serious comedies, they're in a middle ground anyway, so if you put him in musical or comedy, then all of a sudden it starts to feel like the category is too serious and you're not taking real comedy seriously. And that is a problem in all of Hollywood, where real comedy isn't viewed as a real achievement, which is not good, and that's a problem. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, obviously,
you put these in a drama category, and all of a sudden you get that bias now is coming against them, where it's too light, it's not serious enough, it's whatever. And I think they're kind of they're ill-fitting in either category.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what happened to This Is 40. Like, did they straight up hate it?
They must have. Because it seems like it was positioned right for that.
Well, did Knocked Up get any nominations, though? And Funny People didn't. I feel like they only really liked 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Right? Yeah, Knocked Up did not get... I'm looking at the Golden Globes Wikipedia page right now. It was not nominated. And 40-Year-Old Virgin wasn't either, it seems.
They're not really Apatow people.
No.
Okay.
I mean, you can see why they wouldn't be, right? I mean, the foreign press, like,
and they're all kind of, they're all fairly old. They're like trying to be prestigious with the Hollywood foreign press thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense.
So are you suggesting it should have been This Is 70?
Pretty much.
That movie's called Amour.
Well, and when they nominated,
and they didn't like that either. So the answer is no.
Nathaniel, your suggestion that that it knocked out Bernie broke my heart, because I loved Bernie, and I hate the idea that it came close, because it seems like such a small movie that they'd ignore.
Okay, well, while we're on that topic, let's talk about Bernie, because Nick and I are on the what about Bernie and everybody loving it so much, and I'm wondering, I kept thinking it was an introduction to a movie waiting for a movie to happen.
Oh.
That's how I felt about it.
I think I just really fell for the small town aspect of it, and the way that it was like silly, and like they interviewed all these people, and this town felt like a real place, and I thought all the performances really backed that up.
Yeah, I agree.
It was such like a fun little adventure to this weird town, and and I totally bought into why everyone would have loved Jack Black's character so much that they couldn't prosecute him for murder. I just thought the tone was completely perfect.
I guess I was just kind of thrown by the Shirley MacLaine thing, because it was like this a co-starring role, and she literally gets almost no dialogue.
Yeah,
and it's all people telling you what she's like, and then she just gets, and then you just see her face, and then her face has to sort of illustrate what hundreds of people are saying about her, and that was it. It was just a very odd experience for me to watch.
She was the weakest part of the movie for me, I think, both in the way they handled her, and I think in the performance. It wasn't really, it was kind of a phoned-in performance.
Well, but I mean, what else could she do? Like, well, they gave her nothing to work with.
I'm just saying, it's not like she brought a whole bunch extra to it. But I thought that. But I thought, besides that, I thought that was sort of, it didn't kill the movie for me. And I think, like Katie, I think the charm of it was in the stuff with all the townies, which I really loved. Mm-hmm. And I think Jack Black fit into that well, and didn't showboat in his normal way. He showboated in a different way that sort of fit into this movie. You're never going to get him not showboating, but I thought it really worked.
Yeah,
I thought it was really funny, and it sort of snuck up on me as I was watching it. I wasn't really, you know, expecting to love it. So I was just sort of like watching and popping along. And then all of a sudden I was surprised to find myself really loving it.
Yep.
Nick?
And now the police are after me.
Exactly. Well, I'm just feeling like a curmudgeon because I'm the only one who was like, I didn't like it.
No, I didn't either. I felt like it was sort of his homage to Corky St. Clair or something. Like, it seemed like I would rather have the Christopher Guest version of this if this is what we're gonna do. Like, and the movie seemed to be kind of making fun of itself or him or somebody or everybody, and I couldn't quite work out what the limits of that were supposed to be. But I don't even have anything articulate to say about it. I just didn't believe him in that part at all, and I thought it was like kind of interesting when you got to the like thing about how the whole town doesn't want to blame you for something you did if they just didn't like the person you did it to. Like that was kind of a neat idea, but I just felt really uncharmed by a movie that seemed to be going for charming me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. A lot of that stuff rang true to me.
Yeah.
And I didn't really grow up in that small of a community, but I grew up in an enclave of a smallish city. And
I wish I'd grown up in an enclave. That sounds so cool.
That does sound really cool.
I didn't even grow up in
Marcy May Marlene is about.
I didn't even get to grow up in a cul-de-sac. It was just a straight up block in a suburb.
It's not as cool as it sounds. But anyway, but that kind of stuff did ring true, where sort of the on the ground interpersonal politics, if you will, trump so much when you're talking about a close-knit community.
Yeah, I totally believe that as a concept, and I thought it was a direction for the movie to go in when I wasn't really believing its directions. But I don't know, I just kept waiting to actually feel excited about it instead of just finally interested in it, and I just wasn't.
Mm-hmm. I have to note that after seeing this movie, I went and visited my parents in my small southern hometown and found out there is a guy who just started working at the funeral home. He's new in town, and he's all of a sudden making friends with everyone. So he's going to murder an old lady really soon.
Keep an eye on that guy.
I know.
Very close eye.
I mean, hopefully he'll find another mean lady. I'm sure there's plenty to be picked off.
Well, one thing about the Globes this year, besides the comedy, and if anyone has any other last words on comedy, I just have to say I think it was like a really weird message, like a really weird attack on gay icons. No Barbara, no Shirley, no Bernie, no Bette Midler.
Is this the backlash to gay marriage?
And they didn't even like Les Mis as much as they usually like musicals.
And no Sharon Stone, even, which is weird.
Every year without a show. Wait, all right, though, but let's time out, because they nominated Nicole Kidman in The Paperboy, which is like 20 gay things at once. We can't complain that much, can we? Like,
that's true, and they also oh, wait, never mind. that was the SAG.
I was Tommy Lee Jones.
No, listen.
He's not as gay as you think he is.
No, I was gonna say Javier Bardem in Skyfall, but then that was the SAG.
Yeah.
Speaking of SAG, is there a more unfortunate acronym?
There isn't.
Well, are they going to be the SAG-AFTRA Awards at some point?
Probably.
Because that's beautiful.
SAG-AFTRA.
You know, like when you have a baby, they SAG-AFTRA. Thank you, guys. I'm out of here. Goodbye.
He's here every night.
Okay. I have to say, my with being cold and having these coughing jags and everything, it was the experience of watching Ted was really weird because I did not want to laugh. Because laughing hurt at the time because I was still in the throes, you know, and I just was like laughing my ass off.
Am I going to Ted, love guys?
It's you will probably like it more than you think. I watched it and was also like unwilling, but just because I didn't want to like Seth MacFarlane, and I laughed a lot.
I really don't want to like Seth MacFarlane, you guys. Like,
I was completely unwilling and completely loved it.
You don't have to like Seth MacFarlane. It was totally enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Although Mila Kunis's nomination from the Critics' Choice is kind of embarrassing.
You can
omit the Mila Kunis's nomination from that sentence and just say the Critics' Choice was really.
The fact that there's six nominees, and this is a group that I'm now a member of, so I feel like I shouldn't bust it too much, but the fact there are six nominees in every category is nonsense. They can just nominate everybody.
Well, except for they don't. They leave out all these people who actually deserve to be in the categories.
Yep.
Like, especially with the action and comedy performance things.
Well, honestly, the fact that the Broadcast Film Critics nominated Robert Downey Jr. and that the Golden Globes nominated Maggie Smith, who won't show up. Like, who's the real star fuckers here? Like,
right.
I mean, when you have best actor in an action movie, like, your options are a little limited.
But you still have to go with Reheated Leftovers.
Yeah. Know? I mean, at least Jake Gyllenhaal made it in for End of Watch, so.
Well, the existence of those categories to begin with is just the saddest goddamn thing.
Absolutely like, true.
Excuse me. Oh, goodness. That is not pretty. So
ever since you watched Cloud Atlas, you've just been in busted shape.
Yeah, well, no, Cloud Atlas. I watched in. It's true. I watched it in the height of my fever. But
boy, that had to have been an experience.
But
all of that actually did happen to Daniel, in case you were wondering.
And it happened over and over again in false teeth and wigs, and I hated every second of it. And I was cursing the name of all of you who loved it.
I personally apologize.
You thrusted upon me.
I'm sincerely sorry putting you through that.
Great.
I love Cloud
Atlas. I see the fingers crossed behind your back.
But I totally see the point at which Cloud Atlas, like, because there is that tipping point where either you're like into it, and then there's one thing that makes you nuts, and then the rest of it's just painful. Like, I've been there in other movies, I feel for
it. Well, and if you can't hang in, like, if it sort of pushes you away in that middle part with all that ridiculous Jim Broadbent stuff.
I was over it within 5 minutes.
Okay, well, anyway. But I'm saying that, like, for me, at least, the big, like, it really hit me at the very end, like the very, very end. And if like, and if you're checked out by then it's not going to do anything at all. And like, that's, you know, that's the risk they run by making a movie that crazy and sloppy and whatever. And it is sloppy, but I still love it. Yeah, like I really liked it, but like, I'm not blind to its flaws.
Were we going to talk about SAG?
The SAG ensemble race. You all know my annual like gripe about the way they do their ensemble category, which means that you get really odd groupings of people. Sometimes it's very accurate, and other times it is completely like, what the what now? Because, for example, Lincoln.
Right.
This is a great example. There's only 7 nominees.
Just hilarious.
Considering everyone in existence is in that movie.
Yes!
Yeah.
And it's also unfortunate because in some movies you really only need like the top players because the ensemble cast is really not the draw. But with Lincoln, the thing that actually vaulted it way above what any expectations I had for it was the supporting cast.
Yeah. Lee Pace. I'm so mad about that.
Well, there was everybody sort of has a favorite from the. You know,
the fact that they're different just shows the strength.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, this was the first year that I had I had heard that the process is that you have to have a solo name credit
mm-hmm.
But Lincoln doesn't have credits at the beginning.
No, but it could be at the end as well.
Did it? I don't. I guess I haven't watched Lincoln credits. I don't know what happens at the end.
But to me, that's both. Like, it's all the more puzzling, and it's also an incredible cop out on the part of SAG that they can't. Like, they're. You know, you're the Screen Actors Guild. If anybody could take it upon themselves to be an arbiter of something like this, they can. And it's sort of, it seems very like, well, we don't want to get our hands dirty, so we're just going to let the films decide it. And it's like...
But then let the films decide it, because as it is now, they don't get to.
Well, right. If you're going to put it up to credits, which, no matter what, are still an aesthetic part of the movie. And if you're, you know, basing your SAG nominations on maybe a movie wanted to shorten up their opening credit sequence or, like, you know, do whatever with the end credits, like... That shouldn't have any basis on who was good, who was worthy, particularly because, for me, a SAG ensemble nomination is almost always about the strength of your bullpen. Mm-hmm. Like, I get what you're saying about, like, some movies are, you know, it's all about the top-line actors, and that's the determinant. But for me, I almost always, when I recognize ensembles, it's almost always how deep that bullpen goes. Mm-hmm. And to sort of cut off and to have it be that inconsistent. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, I love that Les Mis goes all the way down to Cole Mulkey. That's now, fun.
Les Mis is very thorough.
Yeah, I just don't get why they can't do it the way, like, for example, the producers, where they know the number of people who can be submitted in the Oscar nomination. Right. And so then you have to have those sort of wars within the studio. And that's fine or whatever. I mean, you have to draw the line somewhere. But it just seems like there should be some sort of rule that didn't automatically... attack people who were not famous or who were not as famous.
I'm looking at the Midnight in Paris list from last year and getting angry all over again that Adrian Brody's there and Corey Stoll isn't. They're so angry-making!
Yeah. And so anyway, so I wanted to know what each of you... who would each of you would vote with from SAG lists, and if you could write in an extra nomination and remove one, what would that would be?
For a film or for a person?
For a film.
Lincoln, easy.
Yeah.
Damsels in Distress. I kept it tight.
Nice.
That was so tight. That is the tightest I've ever been on this podcast.
No one is really talking about Damsels in Distress this award season at all, which is...
I really want their song to be nominated.
Is it eligible?
Yes.
Oh, good. That would be really fun.
Hey, everybody. Let's do the sample.
Like, not only is everybody in that movie totally serving what it's doing, but that is a hard tone to serve. And the fact that all on the wavelength, even people who are in one scene, amazing.
Yeah. I'm not into that movie that much, but I do agree with you that the cast is totally, totally in sync, which is nice to see.
They're operators.
They are.
I'm with Nick on Lincoln, and I think I'd probably add in Zero Dark Thirty, because that's got... just as deep of a bullpen. I mean, they're not all working together as much, which is tougher in ensemble, but that cast is incredible.
Well, and the thing about the Zero Dark Thirty cast is, for as much as Jessica Chastain is the lead, she does sort of, like, step to the side for good chunks of that movie. And, like, there are actors who sort of take up the slack in a pretty major way. Jason Clarke certainly does.
Mm-hmm.
And
everybody that wasn't in Lincoln, in other words.
Right, yeah. But so you have these supporting players who all of a sudden are stepping up to be, you know, the de facto lead in big chunks of this, and it's just everybody's really, really quite good. Of the nominees, I would probably go for of the people who were nominated. Like, I think I'm going to hold it against Lincoln that they didn't go as deep into that field. And I would go for Argo. I think Argo is really that's a really strong cast, and especially among the hostages and and like Victor Garber and everything like that. It's although did Victor Garber get the nomination?
Yes, yeah, he did.
Thank God, thank God.
I know. Okay. Oh yeah, that would have been for this desk over.
Yeah. No, yeah, so that would have been that would be my vote.
Argo would be your vote?
Yes.
Oh, not Lincoln, interesting.
He's mad at Lincoln for leaving out
Well, if you're gonna leave out half of the actors I liked, then I'm gonna go for the one that included
most of the
gotcha.
Actors.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that. My vote would also be for Lincoln. And then to add a cast in there, you know, I keep saying I would be tempted for Magic Mike because I really do believe it. it's sort of like the damsels in distress thing. Like, I really think everybody in there, and maybe ensemble is always a master of who's directing you. It's always an example of who's directing you if you're all on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
But I really think that cast is basically perfect at what the tone of that movie is.
So who would they have left off that we would have been angry about off of the Magic Mike cast?
The drug dealer guy. The Latino guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's always the people of color who get left off.
I was going to say, yeah, either him or Kevin Nash, who didn't really speak in the movie, but did that hilarious non-dancing that I cracked up at.
All right.
You would have been able to, like, include Genuine.
Right. Just saw Django Unchained, so I would kind of be tempted to add them in ensemble. Just because, you know, there's all this, like, who of that cast is going to be nominated?
Yeah, they would drive you crazy by, like, including Quentin Tarantino for his cameo and leaving out, like, Kerry Washington or something.
I feel like that was the weakest acting that I've seen in a Tarantino movie yet.
Really? Because I was just saying the vibe, again, we're talking about people serving the tone, and thanks to Nick for bringing that up, but the thing that made Django Unchained much more palatable than I thought it would be given the topic and the tone that he was going for to begin with, which is very comic, feel that the actors were super enjoying each other and super enjoying playing off of each other comes through really strongly in that, kind of like it did in The Fighter, where you could tell the whole cast is just like loving each other and loving that they get to say these lines, you know?
Yeah. I think my problem with it was I felt like the tone in the movie was so inconsistent that, you know, even if the actors were sort of all on board with each other, and I don't necessarily think I think that because I feel like Jamie Foxx was kind of out of sync with... Jamie Foxx sort of, like, had nothing to do for such huge parts of that Candyland sequence.
Yeah.
Which is the best part of the movie.
But it's the part of the movie that goes on for so long that you kind of, like, then when the movie keeps going, you're like, Jesus Christ, I cannot believe.
Yeah, I hated
that whole segment, I have to say.
Really? That's my favorite part of the movie, Candyland. But I also think that Django's kind of a mess and he should have waited till next year.
So badly that I could love the finished version of Django Unchained rather than this being the version we're getting. Like, it feels really, really unfinished. I'm sorry, Nick.
Wait, sorry?
Oh, no.
That we were talking about this movie in depth and you haven't seen it yet.
We were going to try to avoid things that come up for Christmas because we can cover them at Christmas time.
I wish he'd waited so he would have had time to make it in the Yemen, because I think that would have made the movie nicer and also more comic.
Yeah, because you can't say that Django is a comedy musical. Well, maybe it's a musical, but that you can't say that it's a pleasantry.
No, you cannot.
You better listen to your boss, white boy.
Oh, I'm gonna go walking in the moonlight with you.
You wanna hold my hand?
And that's it for this edition of the podcast, part two of this conversation, where we dug into Precursor Madness Week. We'll be up in the next couple of days. Hope you enjoyed this talk about the Comedy Globes and the SAG Ensemble Prize. This is Nathaniel from The Film Experience, and talk to you again soon.